Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jeff Cohen. We have a loaded episode today, plenty to talk about, a lot of emotion behind it. We've got really a little bit of everything today. We're going to talk major league debuts from two of our top pitching prospects that debuted this week, and then we're going to dive into some of the roster moves, moving on to the minors, kind of some of the player of the week for both the hitters and pitchers that we have this week, in addition to a lot of players that showed out. I think it's been a pretty impressive week all around from the minors. A lot of the affiliates had some strong games this week. Birmingham Barons with a huge week. All the other teams had some solid progress for sure. So we got a lot of really exciting players to talk about, and then we're going to wrap up by talking a little bit about the middle infield depth in the organization. I think over the next few weeks, we're going to take some time at the end of the episodes to talk about the depth at certain positional groups within the organization. So this week, we're going to wrap by talking about the middle infielders in the White Sox organization. But first and foremost, we got to go through some records. It's looking pretty solid right now overall. Charlotte is 8-12 after their first 20 games. After the first series against Norfolk, I think there was a lot more negativity, and Charlotte's had some good games this week, which I know Jeff was there for some of them as well. Birmingham is 10-5 after a sweep this week. They look good. The Birmingham Barons roster is really firing on all cylinders right now. We're going to get into that pitching rotation especially in a little bit here, but they are 10-5 after 15 games. Winston-Salem is 5-10, a little bit of a rough week for Winston. Some games they could have won, I think, though the record is probably not quite indicative of how that team has played. I think they've played like more of an average team as opposed to a 5-10 team. But Winston-Salem is 5-10 now going into their series against Rome this week. And then Kannapolis 7-7 to round out the week. They're playing their, 500 ball. They've had some really good games. I think for a roster in Kannapolis that, we really don't see a lot of offensive upside there, I think they're playing, pretty solid baseball right now, which is great to see. So overall, pretty solid performances. It's not beautiful, but in general, Birmingham's the highlight, and the other affiliates are doing some positive things for sure. So how are you feeling about the org and everything going on now, Jeff?
Well, I think you're right, Elijah. A lot of positives this week. On top of that, of course, the major league club scrambling for offense and a lot of roster moves. Are they churning players?
Yeah. We'll start here on a positive note. Nick Nastrini last Monday, so a week ago today, and we're recording on Monday. This will be out on Tuesday. Nick Nastrini on Monday and then Jonathan Cannon on Wednesday following a rainout on Tuesday both made their major league debuts last week. Both of them were really solid, Jeff. I was really encouraged by the first start by both those guys. Nastrini, was a little bit of issues. He gave up that one solo homer on a pitch he just left over the middle to Vinny Pasquantino. Other than that, a few bloop hits, a walk or two, and really nothing significant. Had some really nice strikeouts in that game. And then Jonathan Cannon doing exactly what Jonathan Cannon does, which is force soft contact, ground balls, minimize the damage, right? It should have been a shutout from him, actually. The one run he gave up was completely not his fault on a ball that Dominic Fletcher just slipped on in the outfield. So really, Cannon, five what should have been shutout innings, only three strikeouts, right? But Cannon's a guy who, we know this, you've seen this, I've seen this in person. Like, Cannon's going to force you to ground out and to hit the ball really soft. And he did that in his major league debut. So really awesome stuff from the two of those guys. What did you think from watching those two?
Oh, both were excellent. Both were poised. There had to be a lot of nerves, but they seem really poised, really under control. Their pitches were beautiful, crisp, a lot of movement, a lot of break. They both looked great the first start. I guess tonight we'll get a look at Jonathan Cannon's second start.
Yeah. So that brings me to the less fun part of this. I was really encouraged by their first start. I thought it was great. Yesterday against the Phillies, Nick Nastrini struggled a lot. It's the way I want to preface this, right, is like the Phillies are A, a great team, and B, a stadium at Citizens Bank Park that is notoriously known as one of the hardest stadiums to pitch in. Their fans are rowdy. They're loud. They boo. It's just kind of that Philly culture there. So a really tough matchup and a draw for Nastrini, especially against a team that was coming in after a few games of beating up on the White Sox, right? So they were coming in hot. He struggled for sure. He got pulled and the fourth inning, didn't get an out of the inning, left some runners on base, which ended up coming around to score, ended up giving up 5 earned runs, walked 5 batters across 3 innings of work. So not a great second day for Nastrini. But for me, I saw it as, look, he got a really solid first game. He came into his second game and he got a taste of hardcore MLB hitting, one of the better lineups in baseball, and they took it to him and he couldn't locate his pitches. And when he left slip over the middle, they hit it. And when he didn't, and he was trying to find his spots, he was missing right outside the zone. Right. So it was a rough outing. And then that brings me to today, about an hour ago, when the White Sox decided to option Nastrini after his second start. And Jeff, I want your opinion first before I dive into mine, because this is just classic organization earlier by the White Sox, in my opinion. So what did you think when you initially heard today that Nastrini was going down, Brebbia was coming back off the IL?
You know, on one hand, I was a little surprised, you know, because they both look so good. They both deserved to stay in the rotation for a while. And, you know, when they didn't come down immediately last week, I thought, okay, maybe they're going to get a handful of starts. On the other hand, you still have Clevinger and Keller out there. And, it was pretty disappointing. I guess at the end of the day, not a surprise, but a huge disappointment.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go on a little bit of a tangent here because Nick's a guy that I've seen how hard he works, and I know that what he's doing is working really well. But aside from just that, like from a pure baseball perspective, right? Like this is a guy that is expected to be part of this rotation moving forward, right? Like everybody knows that Nick Nastrini going into 2025 is going to be part of the White Sox's rotation if everything's going well, if he's healthy, right? Like that's the expectation. Right now, the Chicago White Sox are 3-18, Jeff. 3-18. This is one of the worst teams in Major League history to start the season, and I don't see a world where it's getting better. The White Sox are on pace. I would not be surprised if they lost 120 games. Like, I truly would not. That's how terrible this offense is right now. What is the purpose in bringing a guy up, seeing him perform really well in his Major League debut, and then proceeding to say, oh, you had a bad second game, you're going right back to Charlotte to develop, right? Like, there's no logical sense where I agree with that. I understand he only has 6 starts in Charlotte. I get that, right? I hear that. Who the heck cares? I just don't care. Let him develop at the major league level where he's going to be pitching in the long term for a team that's not winning anything. What is the worst case that happens? Nastrini could get blown up 3 more times just like he did against the Phillies. It wouldn't change anything. The White Sox are losing those games regardless because they're not scoring runs. The difference in a pitcher giving up 3 runs versus giving up 7 runs means nothing because the team can only score 1 or 2 runs a game. So it does not matter if he's failing at the major league level because he's ready. His stuff is ready. We saw in his first game, his stuff can play at the major league level. He made Bobby Witt and Salvador Perez look silly on 2 different pitches. Those are professional. Bobby Witt's been an MVP candidate in the American League right now. Like this is a guy that's one of the best players in baseball, and Nick Nastrini struck him out for his first career strikeout, right? Like this is not an issue of him not being good enough. I get it. The command is not where it needs to be. I am not okay with just continuing to prioritize players that are not part of the future. Mike Clevinger is not part of the future in Chicago. For all I care, Eric Fetty might not be. Mike Soroka might not be, right? Nick Nastrini could be. He has 6 years of control, and he's a pitcher with a ton of stuff that we've seen at the highest level succeed. I just don't get it. I don't understand it. Nobody's going to convince me otherwise. It's illogical, and it's classic Chicago White Sox organizational failure.
Yeah, you know, in the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about some of the moves that the White Sox have made that haven't been typical of the White Sox. You know, the aggressive assignments for Cannon and Colson and different things like that. And then we said, oh, they're calling up Nastrini and Cannon. This is a different organization. This is one that's bold and not afraid to do these things. And then this happens, you know, and they kind of, every time think they suck you back in.
100% right. That's 100% right, Jeff. It's just, it's the same old White Sox type of decision-making. I just don't get it. I really don't. Nastrini and Cannon, all they had to show me was that one start for me to think they deserve to be in the rotation for at least 2 months each. There's just no reason not to. I get it. Sure, if he struggles for 5 straight starts like he did yesterday, that's one thing. It was one bad game, Jeff. Like, it's one game. I don't see it. I don't see the vision. I don't see the idea behind it. I just see a team that cannot find their identity, and they're just struggling to keep maintaining the image that they actually want to win, when the reality is whether they want to win or not, they're not winning. So stop trying to fight this image and show, you know, we're trying to be the most competitive team we can be, and just fall into it. Lean into this rebuild because it's not happening this year. This team is not making the playoffs. This team is not going to be anywhere outside the bottom 5 teams in baseball, right? Like, lean into that. Let your young pitchers pitch. Let your young guys go. I mean, again, Nastrini and Cannon, right? Like, were those the 2 best starts this season outside of Garrett Crochet, probably? I think Fetty had one kind of gem, right? Like, other than one game from Fetty and 2 or 3 games from Crochet, Nastrini and Cannon's major league debuts were already in the top 5-6 starts of the season for the White Sox. Right. Let's see that happen for more games. And if they struggle, who cares?
I'm going to guess, you know, it's a long season. I'm going to guess at the end of the season, they each have 8 to 12 major league starts. What do you think?
That would make me livid, Jeff. That I will be very, very, very upset if those two do not have at least 15 starts each. It's just absurd. I mean, 20 starts each. There's just what I think and what I want is different, right? So I'll be clear. I want them to get a start for the rest of the season. I still think they should get at least 15 each. I don't see why that wouldn't be the case. I really don't get it. I think, I mean, it seems to me like my hunch is that Cannon actually might stick in the rotation, not because he's better than Nastrini, but because he is a little bit more safe. The floor is a little bit higher, right? Like we've seen with Cannon, like his floor is there to the point where he's not the type of pitcher that's going to get blown up, even if he's not getting strikeouts and whiffs as much. I think he might stay because I don't know, what are you doing, demoting both of them? And then you have a spot for Clevinger and you have another spot for Flexen to go back in the rotation. Like, I mean, also if Flexen ends up being the starter that takes Nastrini's spot on Friday, I will be even more upset because even worse than Clevinger coming up is if Flexen goes back. I mean, there's just, it's frustrating. I don't want to take the whole episode on this, Jeff, but I don't get it. I don't see the vision. I just, these two are part of the future. Let them pitch.
Right, right.
So moving on from that, that's all we got to say there. We'll get to the minor leagues now. Enough from me on that front, but I don't see it. Getting over to our affiliates, which was a lot more exciting and something that I don't know about you, but I don't even really watch the White Sox much these days compared to Birmingham and some of these other teams that are way more fun to watch. I watched every Birmingham game this week, I think, and I loved every second of it. So we'll start with both our hitter and pitcher of the week coming from the Birmingham Barons. The hitter of the week is Brooks Baldwin. Brooks Baldwin, Jeff. I mean, talk about a great start to the season from a guy that just got up to high A Winston at the end of last year, right? He only played a month in Winston, immediately gets assigned to Birmingham this year, where they were like, you know, if Colson's going to be in Charlotte, we might as well let Brooks play shortstop in Birmingham, and has not only kept up, but has exceeded all expectations for him. He went 11 of 23 this week. He almost hit 500. His season OPS is over 1,000. Brooks Baldwin is rocking a 216 WRC plus with a 1033 OPS this season, almost hit 500 this past week. And it's just, he's just dominating in every way, really. He's just been like the ultimate two hitter for the Birmingham Barons this season so far.
A 490 OBP. He's getting on base every other at bat.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, all of a sudden, he's clearly looking like a major leaguer and clearly looking like he might be in Charlotte. So, you know,
and what's crazy with Baldwin is it's good defense too. I think, you know, coming into the year, he is a utility man. And I think part of his value long-term is going to come in the fact that he's comfortable playing all of the field. He played outfield last year. He played second, he played short, he played third, even a little. But this year, like, he's starting at shortstop every game and he looks good. This is not a guy who looks uncomfortable at shortstop. Right. And I don't think he's a long-term major league starting shortstop, but at the same time, like, if he's looking good and sound defensively at shortstop, what is that going to make him look at second base? Like, he could be phenomenal at second base, right? Like, that's a big difference when you see guys that can perform like that in at shortstop, right? And it's a well-rounded approach too. Baldwin's not just, he's not a huge power hitter. He's not a guy that's going to hit 30 home runs, but he's got some pop. He's driving the ball in the gap. And on top of that, he has a good approach, right? Like, you see guys that get elevated, especially that jump from high A to double A can often be a time where strikeout rates elevate. There's a lot of guys in Birmingham right now, even when they're hitting well, that have really high strikeout rates. Brooks Baldwin, an almost 11% walk rate and a 16% strikeout rate. So he's not striking out much at all. 16% is a low rate. He's getting on base. He's got contact, line drives, good defense. It's just really, I mean, of all the hitters in Birmingham, like, talk about most impressive, just from a perspective of like what his experience prior to this year and then what he's doing right now. He's the big, I mean, engine right now, the way he's playing in Birmingham.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you think about it. First, it was Romy Gonzalez, right? He was going to be versatile player who could play all over the infield and the outfield. And he, you know, we don't really know what he's capable of because he was never healthy enough to show us what he could do. Then there was Zach Remillard, but we knew he had limited upside. And now Brooks looks like the guy that, worst case, could be get a shot to be that versatile bench player. But you're right, best case, you know, the White Sox are desperate to have someone play second base long term.
Yeah, I think that's best case, right? I think I the value of a utility player is undersold, I think, by a lot of people. Like, having a guy on your roster that can slot in five different spots on any given day is super valuable. So I think Brooks, at the least, looks like a great utility player, but there's a world where he becomes a starting second baseman. Like you just said, I mean, he is dominating in every facet of the game right now. And one thing I want to point out here before we get into the pitcher of the week, right? We've talked a lot, Jeff, about the draft success in the past few seasons compared to the decade prior, right? Like we went through drafts from 2014 to 2020 and it was ugly. Look at these players that we're talking about right now. Brooks Baldwin with a 12th rounder in 2022. And the guy we're about to talk about next was the 13th rounder in 2022, right? So that's back-to-back second half of the draft picks signed for essentially nothing that now look like significant prospects and long-term pieces for the organization. So talk about, you know, a turnaround, right? Like there is some really solid draft picks and you never know what's going to happen come when they get to the big leagues, right? It's hard to gauge what they're going to look like when they get to the major league level. But there's players in Birmingham, in Winston, in Kannapolis that came from the last few drafts that look like major league pieces. And that's a big step in the right direction.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. You know, you got the top three picks and you really want to hit on at least one or two of those, but
of course,
but the White Sox are doing a tremendous job at, you know, 4 through 15. They're just guys all over all these rosters. You're absolutely correct. Yeah.
No, completely. So let's get into the pitcher of the week. The pitcher of the week, like I just said, 13th rounder in 2022, Mason Adams. Mason Adams has become a huge favorite of mine just from watching him kind of develop over the last year. We've talked a lot about him last year, pitching, piggybacking on Noah and just kind of his quick rise to the system. Like, Noah, I put this on Twitter a few days ago. Like, I'm not sure there's five pitchers in the minor leagues right now that I'm taking over Mason Adams, Jeff. I really don't know if there is. He looks polished. He looks poised. He looks confident. And the way he pitches is just unique enough to get people kind of off his timing. And he's smart enough as a pitcher to continue to execute at such a high level. Mason Adams, two starts this week. He started the Tuesday game and the Sunday game against the same team, right? So when you play in the minors, starting the rare occasion where somebody does start the beginning of the series and the end of a series, right? Like pitching the same team in one week is incredibly hard. It's naturally you're going to struggle more and a team is going to get used to seeing you because they just looked at you 5 days ago, right? That was not the case this week for Mason Adams. Two starts against the Mississippi Braves, 11 innings, one run allowed between the two games, only 9 hits, one walk, and 17 strikeouts, Jeff, in two starts against the Braves. Wow. Just pure and utter dominance from Adams in two starts this week, right? And both games, he was just mowing them down every single time he got the chance to. It's a unique look from his arm. All of his pitches come out looking really similar out of the hand, which is something that a lot of young pitchers struggle with. And Adams doesn't have a problem disguising his pitches. It's just a really well-rounded, high-floor quality pitcher.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, that he faced the same lineup twice in a week. You know, in Winston and Kannapolis, they both go with 6-man rotation specifically to avoid that.
Exactly. So this is, you got a 5-man rotation going in Birmingham. And instead of trying to change it up this week, they said, you know, Mason Adams is going to get two starts against the same team because he's on schedule too. Right. And how soon do you think we could see Mason Adams in Charlotte? Because I know that sounds crazy, right? Like he just made 3 starts in Birmingham last year, has made 3 starts so far this season in Birmingham. Right. But he just looks so polished and so just sophisticated for a pitcher at that level.
So Drew Thorpe also looks really good. Do you think he might jump Thorpe and be up to Charlotte?
No, I think Thorpe's first, but I think Adams is entering the second territory, right? I think he would have said last year, you know, it would have been Eater. It would have been even Bush, maybe. Maybe it would have been Ariarte, who's looked very good as well. But I think Adams is the second guy that's going to make that jump because his floor is high. You got to remember, because of where he was drafted, right? He's already 24 years old. I think, and the way he's pitching right now, it's just a steady, steady type of pitching. I think Adams is right behind Thorpe, honestly.
Well, this kind of goes back to what we were saying about Nastrini and Cannon. The White Sox have to be forward-looking, get those guys up to the major leagues, and get Thorpe and Adams to AAA, and maybe even a little taste of the major leagues at the end of the season.
I completely agree. I think Thorpe's a guy that everybody thinks should be in the majors this season, and Adams probably more of a 2025 guy, but like, again, what's the downside? Come late this season, right? Like, let's say we're in August, right? And you've got an August rotation that starts with Garrett Crochet, Nick Nastrini, Jonathan Cannon. Why are those last two spots not Drew Thorpe and Mason Adams? Like, right. I mean, really, maybe Eric Fetty's like, oh, he's pitching well. He has looked pretty solid his last few starts. Maybe Fetty's a guy, because he's on a 2-year deal, you want to keep him around next year. okay, but you could also trade him at the deadline. You could also see and pluck some value out of that. Mike Soroka, right? Like, he struggled a lot. If Soroka's not pitching well at the deadline, it's okay. It's okay to cut ties. You're not losing anything at that point, right? But you've got guys like Thorben Adams who are just dominating and look excellent. And we're going to go a little bit out of order here because as long as we're talking about this Birmingham rotation, we're just going to dive into it, Jeff. There are 6 games this week. The Birmingham Barons rotation allowed 5 earned runs in 6 games this week.
Impressive, impressive. And again, just to for anyone who can't remember all the starters, it's Thorpe, Uriarte, Adams, Bush, and Eder.
And this week it was Thorpe threw a shutout, 7-inning shutout. He was almost the pitcher of the week, but Adams throwing twice this week earned him that nod. Thorpe threw a 7-inning shutout. Uriarte threw a shutout, I believe, I think either 4 or 5 innings. And then both Kai Bush and Jake Eder gave up 2 earned runs apiece. So a total of 5 earned runs allowed in 6 games with all Thorpe, Adams, and Uriarte all throwing shutouts at some point this week. It was just excellent pitching. It's to be a little bit of context here, right? The Braves double A lineup is probably one of the worst in the Southern League, right? So not a great lineup, but no matter who you're facing, 5 earned runs in 6 games from a starting pitching staff is unbelievable.
Right. Right. And it's, and what is so great is it's double A. You know, double A is, a lot of guys go from double A straight to the major leagues. That's where you demonstrate if you've got the talent or not. It's not, you know, in low A and high A, oh, he's got a nice floor, he's got a nice ceiling. They are doing it.
Right, 100%. And Drew Thorpe, what was one of the crazy things I took away from his start, 7 innings, 85 pitches, Jeff. Drew Thorpe, he only had 3 strikeouts too. Drew Thorpe wasn't even, he didn't have his best stuff. It was very apparent to me watching him that game that his stuff was not as sharp as it was the last start. And he still went 7 shutout innings because he's so talented at pitching to soft contact and just forcing guys to swing at things that they don't want to swing at. Even when he doesn't have his stuff that's as quite as sharp and he's not getting those whiffs as much, he's getting guys to just roll over and just hit little soft grounders, little pop flies. Like, nobody's hitting the ball hard off him. And that's been a trend all season, right? Like, he's given up 1 run in 3 starts now. And in each of those starts, like, nobody's hitting the ball hard against him. And then you got a guy like Uriarte, who's a totally different type of look, where Iriarte's stuff is really, really gross sometimes. The command is not quite where you want it to be yet for Uriarte. But because his stuff is so good, he can kind of fall back into that type of pitching like Thorpe, where if he's not getting as many whiffs, he can just force guys into swinging at poor things and soft contact. Iriarte now 13 innings, 0 runs allowed this season, earned runs, let me be clear. So it has just been an absolute treat to watch these games. I encourage all White Sox fans to check out the Birmingham Barons. Kurt Bloom does an excellent job calling the game. He knows pitching really well too. I love listening to Kurt. We had him on the podcast before the season, but I love listening to the way Kurt talks about pitchers. He just knows the guys. He's seen a million guys pitch over the time in Birmingham, and he really just knows how to see what's happening within a game with a pitcher. So I really encourage everybody to go check out some Barons starts. Every single game you tune into, there's going to be a starting pitcher that's worth watching. And those two from, I mean, Thorpe and Uriarte coming over from the Padres, right? Like, Dylan Cease is great, but those two look like legit, legit prospects right now. 1 run allowed between the two of them all season. Pretty incredible. So that rotation, Jeff, is something. And I can't wait for you to get to see some of those guys in Charlotte because they should be there. At least Thorpe and potentially Adams should be there very soon, in my opinion.
And you and I thought, you know, there was you in particular came up with the theory, which made a lot of sense, that the Knights were looking for, needed another starter over the weekend, and you thought maybe it would be Thorpe. And so, you know, I was talking to manager Justin Jersley early in the week, and I said, we were talking about the rotation. I said, I know you can't comment on this, but it sure would be fun to see Drew Thorpe, you know, take the ball Friday night. He just laughed.
Yeah, it would be fun. It would be cool. I think it would be nice to. And then, you know, he didn't, right? But then what did he do? He turned in 7 shutout innings for Birmingham. So it's like, it's really fun. I get why people don't want to be optimistic, and I get why it's frustrating to watch the White Sox right now, right? But like, the pitching talent is there. I hope that it continues to trend this direction. But we're looking at a pitching depth in this organization that could be really legit and could be a really exciting part of the future. Let's shift gears a little. I know we went out of order there, went to the Birmingham rotation just because they've been so excellent, but let's start in Charlotte. We've got only a few players to talk about per usual, from the Knights roster. What did you see from Oscar Colas this week? He got 2 games in the big leagues, went right back down to Charlotte. What have you noticed from Colas and just heard from him kind of the last week or two?
Well, I think he looks so good this year. It's clear the White Sox want him to be want him to have better plate discipline. And I talked actually to both Jersh and Oscar himself about the fact that he looks more patient. And the way Jersh described it was, he's still an aggressive hitter, but he's aggressive with pitches in the zone now. He looks really good. And, you know, his defense has looks very much improved as well. So,
yeah,
I'm disappointed that Sosa fell flat again when he got a shot. But I think, Cola, I'd like to see him get another shot because he looks ready.
Yeah, it just keeps coming back to this question of like when is the right time to bring players up? And I don't think I know I sounded very frustrated earlier, but I don't think I know that. I don't think you know that. I don't think anybody really knows that. I mean, the organization can say they have exact plans of when guys are going to come up, but it's super hard to figure out when the right time is to bring players up. It's one of the most difficult things about managing a farm system, right? But you're right though, Colas. I mean, 858 OPS this season, only 11 strikeouts, 6 walks. So obviously better approach. I think he, just from watching a few time games of him, right, like he looks more confident in the plate and he looks like he has more of a plan. He doesn't look like he's just going up there trying to hit a home run. He looks like he's going up there with a more nuanced approach to his at bats, which is something we've been wanting to see from him. You know, 3 home runs, right? 2 doubles, a triple. It looks better. It looks better. It looks more confident. Same thing in spring training, right? Like when I remember talking in spring training to Grifol and guys there, and like people were speaking very highly of Colas. And there's a reason why this guy was a top prospect a year and a half ago, right? Like this is not a player that is a complete lost cause. It's taking him some time. And we'll see. He's going to get a shot at some point this season in Chicago. And I'm curious to see where it'll end up going for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other guy to talk about, well, actually two guys to talk about in Charlotte. One, just briefly, is Colson. He hit 2 home runs last weekend, and we thought, all right, this is the power starting to show itself. But he was just really lost this week, 0 for 11, 6 strikeouts. Just a little bit of a slump, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, we're both confident he'll figure it out and be Colson
again. Yeah. I've had a lot of people ask me about Colson just on Twitter and stuff this past week or two, and I get the concern. The stats look ugly, right? The strikeout is way higher than it's been in his career. But people got to remember, right? Like this is a guy that has not had that many games under his belt. And I think that the Sox trust him and they believe in his talent, which I do and everybody does, right? But like he had a really short season last year, right? He had a lot of his season missed due to injury. He got sick at one point and missed a week. He only ended up playing, 30 some games in Birmingham, I believe, last year, right? So this is a guy, 37 games last year in Birmingham, right? At that level, right? And then immediately going into Charlotte this year. So this is someone with a total of 50 games in Birmingham. And now 3 weeks of time in Charlotte, right? He's still really young and he still needs more reps under his belt. I also think he's working to tap into that power, right? Like I think a big part of the season for him is trying to figure out how to add a little bit more impact because the approach was great last year in Birmingham, but the impact wasn't always there for him. He didn't have as many extra base hits and home runs as you were hoping to see last year from him. So I think this is a guy that's working on adding some more oomph to his game while adjusting to a higher level of pitching and getting used to playing at a level that he hasn't played at much. So it's going to take some time. I'm not worried about Colson. I know you're not worried about Colson. Just let's be patient. Let's not try to, I think people that had the expectation of, oh, Colson could get called up in May or June if he's playing, like, no, let's relax. He needs a few months at least. Like I said this at the beginning of the year, like I don't want to see him before All-Star break. I don't even want to see a consideration of him being up before All-Star break. Like take the time with him. He'll be fine.
And one thing I noticed with him with the strikeouts, he takes a lot of called third strikes. And that goes back to he's very patient at the plate. He's got excellent plate discipline. And I think he's still trying to figure out how to be more aggressive and maintain that plate discipline.
100%. It's a balance. It's going to take some time. I would not be too worried about Colson if I was anybody else,
And then the last guy who just got called up was Danny Mendick. We know the White Sox are desperate for offense. And Mendick has been as hot as any player I've watched in Charlotte in 1 week. He had home runs in 5 straight games and I'm curious to see, what kind of boost he can offer in Chicago, but he's deserving. He's absolutely deserving of going up.
Yeah, he's a fan favorite. People like him. I remember when he was with the team a few years ago, people loved him with the Sox. He had that hot start to the year that made people really fall in love with him and then got hurt, and it was an unfortunate situation, right? So happy to see Mendick back with the Sox. I mean, ultimately, like you said, Lenin Sosa – it's frustrating. It's a bummer, but Lenin Sosa got an opportunity to play a decent amount and looked like not a major league baseball player. Unfortunately, that play yesterday against the Phillies was one of the worst plays I've seen in my entire life defensively. That was just atrocious. And unfortunately, Sosa just is going to go back down. We'll see what he can do. I think he's entering the territory where I wouldn't be shocked to see him get DFA'd at some point this season. Unfortunately, I hope that he can get another shot with the White Sox because I'd like to see what he can do. I still think the bat has a lot of pop in it, but Mendick right now is the better option to be on the White Sox roster, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Short term. Yeah, it's got to be Mendick.
So shifting away from Charlotte, I know we already hit on the Birmingham rotation. We won't go back to that, but there's a few hitters I want to highlight in Birmingham in addition to Brooks Baldwin, who we already talked about. Edgar Caro, Jeff. Edgar Caro looks legit. He looks like the prospect that I was extremely excited to get in that Giolito trade last year. He looks like the prospect who was one of the best players in single-A baseball in 2022. And then you got to remember, right? Like I've said this many times, like Caro was rushed last year. Like the Angels rushed the heck out of all their prospects. That's what they've done the past few seasons to try and get the most out of the Trout-Otani era, now the Trout era, right? But Caro was a really, really young player in Birmingham last year, in Double A last year in general. And you saw the power reduce a little bit. You saw his approach was still excellent. And his approach is something that has been consistently great throughout his minor league career. But you saw the power come down a little bit and you saw him kind of look less impactful, still talented, still a good above average player, but a little less impact. Now he looks like one of the better hitters in all of Double A right now. I saw James Fox, our leader at Future Sox, posted something about how he's leading the Southern League in homers, RBIs, OPS, something else, I think. Like, Caro is having a really, really good start to the season. 229 WRC plus right now, Jeff. An OPS well over, I think his OPS is over 1100 right now. I think it's 1130 something right now. So really just all in all, like, a terrific hitter and at the heart of that Birmingham lineup, he is what's stirring that engine right now. 5 home runs, 19 RBIs across 14 games, like 14 games. And he's got 5 home runs and 19 RBIs. Caro, a walk-off home run yesterday. It was an awesome walk-off, came back, a come from behind win to help out the Barons last night. Caro ended it on a 3-run homer. He's hitting balls all over the field. He's driving the ball. He still looks confident at the plate. He's not striking out much. Just looks like the catcher of the future that we think he can be.
Yeah. And you know what? I've got to give credit where credit is due. You've been in his corner from day one.
I appreciate that. I'm a huge fan of his. I thought when that trade was struck, I looked at that and I said, this is our catcher for a long time. And it's not a perfect product, right? Like, he still is working on some things. He's still working on some things defensively. He still has a few things he's trying to hammer down, right? But a switch hitting catcher with the type of pop that he has and the approach that he has is going to be very, very valuable. And I think with this season, especially, like, right, he's 21. He's a 21-year-old catcher in Double A. He spent all of last season as a 20-year-old in Double A and wasn't bad, right? He wasn't amazing, but he wasn't bad. Now you're seeing at 21 years old him take that step to being the player he was 2 years ago, but at a way higher level now. So I think Caro is a fabulous player. I think he's going to be in the top 50 of a lot of top 100 prospect lists fairly soon, I think. I think by midseason this year, we're going to see him in that top 50 tier. I think he's one of the premier catching prospects in baseball, and there's a reason to – he's showing everybody what we knew he was capable of, for sure.
Right. So let's move on to we've talked about Baldwin and
Caro. One more guy. There's a lot of fun guys in Birmingham, right? Like, we've talked about them in the past. Wilfred Varis, Terrell Tatum, Tim Elko. There's a lot of guys that have – Brian Ramos is struggling right now, but I still am confident in Ramos. The last guy I want to highlight for this week is Duke Ellis, for a name that people might not recognize the name Duke Ellis all that much. He's been around for a while, 26 years old. I'm not even sure he qualifies necessarily as a prospect, right? But Duke Ellis has one of the craziest stat lines that I have ever seen right now. He has played he has 30 plate appearances. Yesterday, I updated this. He's only played in 11 games and he has 30 plate appearances, 15 stolen bases, Jeff. Duke Ellis is one of the fastest players you will ever see, and he has 15 stolen bases and he's only had 30 plate appearances. How insane is that?
Yeah, I think you gave him the Billy Hamilton comp, and that's spot on. Yeah, that's
amazing. It's crazy. I mean, yeah, it's unbelievable. The first game of the season that he got into this year, he had 3 stolen bases. And since then, he only has 3 games he's even played in this year where he doesn't have a stolen base. Like that's just not even, that shouldn't even be real, right? Like 11 games he's played and he's stolen at least one in 8 of those games, and he's stolen 2 or more in 6 games already this season. So it's just unbelievable speed from Duke Ellis. He's actually playing pretty well as well. At 364 batting average this season is not too shabby as well. So Ellis is a guy that, you know, he's the fourth outfielder in Birmingham. He's not even really a starter there necessarily. But when he's getting in the game, he's making an impact. And right, 57 stolen bases in 2022, which was his last fully healthy season. Last year he was hurt for most of the year, right? And then this year he comes back and he turns in 15 stolen bases in his first 11 games of the season. He's a speedster of all speedsters.
And, you know, I know we need to move on, but I just wanted to mention Terrell Tatum.
Yeah.
And what interests me in his stats is his .481 on base percentage. And he's got 12 hits, but he's also got 9 walks already this year, which explains the ridiculously high OBP. And just to remind people, he was one of only 5 minor leaguers last year to have over 100 walks.
Yeah, Terrell Tatum is really, truly an excellent plate approach. You know, walk percentage is over 15% right now. Like, that's not something that you really see. Like, that doesn't really happen. So this is a guy who, you know, just has a smart approach. He does strike out a little bit too much, which is interesting for a guy that is, you know, has that much of a walk rate, right? So he does swing, but he knows when to swing at least. Even if he's missing, he's swinging at the right pitches, which is something that's really impressive for that age. In addition to being fast, right? 4 stolen bases, he's got some really good jump, and being a really solid fielder. He's been bouncing around him and Jacob Burke have been switching off in center field, with the other one playing a corner spot, because both of them are more than capable in center field. So they're both getting reps out there, because they should both get reps out there for now. So it's cool to see Tatum as well. Anybody else on that roster? I think we're good.
Yeah, let's move on to Winston.
Moving on to Winston-Salem. Winston-Salem's got a pretty cool roster going on. I know that 5-10 record isn't pretty, but they've got some really exciting players up and on that roster. And I want to start it off with last year's first round pick, Jacob Gonzalez, because this is a guy that I need to give some credit to Jacob Gonzalez, because I wasn't super high on the draft pick. Last year was frustrating, right? It was hard to watch him struggle so much early on. But he made some adjustments this offseason. A lot of people talked about how he kind of made these swing adjustments. And right now, Jacob Gonzalez is really looking like a different player this year in comparison to his brief stint last year. And that's why you got to be patient with guys. Jacob Gonzalez this season, the biggest thing that stands out to me, 17.7% walk rate and only a 9.7% strikeout rate. So Gonzalez was touted coming out of college for a strong approach, but it has been more than strong. His approach has been phenomenal. Even with, you know, not the best hitting stats so far, right? A 371 on base percentage, in large part due to those walk rates. And then you're starting to see some of those big games, right? I think this past week it was, you know, in, what was it? I think across these games, he had a few nice hits. I think last he had a triple earlier in the week, I know, that was impressive. And then he walks almost every game. So what do you think about from Gonzalez so far?
Well, there's also an interesting phenomenon that seems to be happening in Winston-Salem, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I think a couple of years ago you had Colson Montgomery get on base 51 straight games. And then the next year you had Jacob Burke come along, break the record, go 52 games. And now Gonzalez, isn't he in the 30s, I believe?
I think he's at like 33. Yeah, he's doing it. It's interesting. Yeah. It's cool to see. He gets on base a lot. I mean, it's just, it's a very sophisticated approach, which is evident to him being, you know, a college player at a high level in the SEC and having that experience under his belt, and now looking like he's like fully adjusted to being a pro this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So great stuff from Gonzalez. I'm excited to see more and more from him, because I know he has even more impact in that bat. But the approach and the swing and the decision making looks much better this year than it did last year, which is already a very positive sign for the first round draft pick, right? Going over to another hitter before we dive back into pitching again. A former second rounder has caught my eye a little bit, because he's someone who was drafted kind of in the middle of that, you know, in the middle of the White Sox being at their peak of being, you know, competitive, right? A few years ago in 2021, they went with Colson Montgomery in the first round. And that was like, oh, this is the long-term shortstop. The second round was another high school player who was viewed at the time as like, this is the long-term third baseman. And it hasn't been pretty for the first 2 years, but Wes Kath looks like he made some adjustments this offseason, and he looks like he's a lot more comfortable with Winston-Salem than he was for most of last season, where he spent the whole year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think I mentioned this to you before. When I saw him his first season in Kannapolis, he was just a scrawny little high school kid with a nice reputation. Now, I mean, he's put on weight. He's put on muscles. He looks like a major league hitter now.
Yeah, and he's fallen off of a lot of prospect radars, and because he has had a rough 2 years, right? But 21 years old, like Westcath is not an old guy. Because he was a high school pick, he's still 21. Like, he's younger than a lot of players at that level, right? Three home runs this past week, two this weekend in back-to-back games. The strikeout rate is still high. He still whiffs a lot, which is concerning, right? Like, last year he had a 43% strikeout rate, and it's at 39% to start this year, right? So a lot of whiff. But the walk rate is almost double what it was last year, and he's tapping into the power. Four home runs this season so far now for Kath, three of which came in the past six games, right? So he's finding a little bit of a groove, and I don't know if it's, again, you got to reduce the whiff rates a little bit and the chase rates. He still needs to kind of hone in and limit those strikeouts, right? But you can see that power that made him a very intriguing prospect just as soon as, you know, a year or two ago, right? So Kath is someone that he is not fully back on the radar in terms of like future like potential big leaguer, right? But like, he's showing some things in the past few weeks that make me think that he's made some adjustments. He's finding his groove a little bit, and he looks to be more just comfortable at the plate than he did for much of last year.
Right. And then just wanted to mention one last hitter briefly, the third guy to come over in the Thorpe deal was Samuel Zavala. He's still trying to figure it out. He's still has too many strikeouts. But to be honest, that whole Winston team, other than Jacob Gonzalez, is not hitting at all. I think but the team hit like 177 last
week. Yeah, definitely not a ton of hitting, but Kath, some home runs. Zavala, some nice hits. He had a nice game. I believe it was it yesterday or 2 days ago? Yesterday, he had three hits. He had two doubles and a single yesterday in addition to a walk. So he got on base four times yesterday after kind of not having a great week before that. But Zavala is a guy that, you know, we are very excited to see more and more of him. I think the talent is there. The improvement's there. He looks healthy. I know he dealt with some injuries in the past. He looks comfortable. He looks healthy. He looks good in the outfield. Just someone that should continue to kind of tick up as the season goes on and as he continues to age and progress. Shifting over to the pitching side of things, we will start with the star of that team, and then we'll dive into some other guys that are definitely mentioning. Noah Schultz, I know we talk about him almost every week. We don't have to go super in-depth on it, but, you know, a solid game, right? I think Schultz is having some degree of growing pains, I would say, trying to kind of figure out what his pitching looks like at a full-time level with, you know, he's pitched the biggest thing is four innings in three straight games. Noah Schultz is getting in the game. He's pitching every week. He's getting the pitches under his belt. And the strikeout rate's absurd, right? I think 23 strikeouts in three starts. So 23 strikeouts across 12 innings. That's not normal. It hasn't been perfect, right? This game, he had a few walks. He had a few wild pitches this game this weekend. But again, only one hit allowed and six strikeouts. Like, the stuff, nobody in high A is going to rock Noah Schultz. He's just too good for that, really.
Absolutely.
And then a few more pitchers. Tyler Schweitzer had a nice bounce back. Schweitzer is a guy who is kind of right outside the top 30 range. Someone who's just a high floor college arm, kind of just a consistent, solid guy. He had a rough start to the season, and then kind of yesterday, this week, when he started early this week, he bounced back really well. Six innings of one run ball, six strikeouts for Schweitzer. Good to see him get back in the right track after a rough first start of the season a little bit. And then the other guy I want to mention who's probably not as on the radar to most people is Riley Goins. Was the fifth player in that goofy, weird Aaron Bummer trade. Four big leaguers that came over, and then one kind of long-term, maybe he'll be something kind of guy. 24 years old, college draft pick from Illinois. But, you know, it looked really good. Yesterday? I think, yeah, it was just yesterday that he started in Winston-Salem. Six innings, two hits, one run, eight strikeouts for Riley Goins in his third start with the Winston-Salem Dash. That comes off of a really rough first start, a decent second start, and then his third start really putting some things together from Goins.
Right. And there are two statistics that I looked at this week for the pitching staff. One is the batting average against, you know, Noah Schultz. Teams are hitting 171, Juan Corella, 125, Tanner McDougal, another guy, 192, Tyler Schweitzer, 226. And the other thing I look at is how many walks are they giving up? And you know, Corella has given up seven. That's a little bit high. But Schweitzer only three, Peyton Paulette only three. So I like that they're being aggressive. They're not nibbling.
And, yeah. The last guy I wanted to mention was Juan Carella as well, because you, like you mentioned, seven strikeouts, but all of those were in his first two games. Big improvement for Carella after struggling with the command his first two starts. This game, five innings, one hit, no walks, and four strikeouts this past week. So only one base runner allowed for Carella this past week. Like we said, the pitching depth oozes right now. And Carella is a guy that I was super high on coming into the year. And his first start was really shaky. His second start was also a little bit rough. And then he seemed to find something this week where he threw five innings with only one hit and no walks. So really a good improvement from Carella. That whole pitching staff is exciting. Peyton Paulette's another guy that I think we'll continue to see improvement from. Has not been his best so far, but I'm patiently waiting on him to kind of have one of those games where like, oh, Peyton Paulette, which I think will be right around the corner. So great stuff from the pitching staff in Winston. Like we said, the pitching staffs all around are great. Shifting gears to Kannapolis, we'll briefly dive through these guys before we get into the middle infielders. Aldrin Batista again this week, Jeff. He was amazing. He was our pitcher of the week last week. This week was just another really good start. He got pinched on a few calls, I thought, in that game that I watched in Kannapolis. There was a few – his stats look worse than I think they should, and they still look pretty good, right? Six hits across five innings of work this week, one earned run allowed, five strikeouts. Batista looks like he should be in Winston pretty soon. He just doesn't seem like he needs to be in Kannapolis much longer to me.
Right. Two starts, 10.1 innings, batting average against 184, one walk, 13 strikeouts. That's just insane.
It's good stuff, especially in Canny, where usually single A can be a little more hitter friendly because pitchers are kind of adjusting to the major professional baseball. And there's a lot of really young arms there that can get hit around a little. And Batista is not getting hit around at all. The other pitcher I want to mention in Kannapolis is Seth Keener. Seth Keener, you got to see his last start where he kind of couldn't quite find his command, was struggling a little bit to locate. This week was much better from Keener. Encouraging stuff. The command was still a little iffy, but what I noticed from him was just more liveliness on his stuff a little bit. The fastball looked good. The slider looked a little bit sharper this week. Only one run allowed across four and two thirds for Keener.
Yeah, you know, when I talked to him, it had been a rough week, but he talked about making several adjustments, and it's great to see that he did, and they seem to be successful.
Yeah, he looked better. And then two hitters. The Canny offense is definitely not great. It struggled a lot, to be honest. And there's some guys on the way which are going to help coming from the Arizona Complex League, which is going to be big to get some bats back into that lineup. But one guy I want to mention is Ryan Galaney. Ryan Galaney was, I believe he was injured or just not with the team at least to start the season. Made his season debut this week. Looked pretty good. I think Galaney, as a college guy, he looked good last year in his brief stint with the team. He was a 13th rounder this past year. And then got back into game action with three games this week, had a few really nice games. He had a three-hit game in his second game back this season, two RBIs, a total of five hits on the week in his first three games of the season. So Galaney's a guy that will slot into the middle of that lineup and should be one of the more productive bats in Kannapolis. And then the last one I want to mention is Albertson Osigan. I believe that's how you say it. I'm honestly not 100% sure. That is probably a name that most of you have never heard in your life, and a name that I was not familiar with until about a month ago. I talked to Dan Helody before the season, and he said, you know, that guy looks – Osigan looks pretty good. He had some experience in the Boston system, ended up getting released. The White Sox picked him up right before the season started. He's been one of the more productive bats in Kannapolis, and someone that, you know, 22 years old, a little bit of an older guy for that level, right? But Osigan is someone who I think could be on his way to Winston-Salem in the near future because he does look pretty solid so far this season.
Right, right. Just circling back, yeah, I noticed Ryan Galaney at the end of last year, he got in for maybe one or two dozen games, and you could see immediately that this guy had some power, and I'm glad he's finally back with the team, and I'm curious to see what he can do over a full season in Kannapolis.
Yeah,
he really looked good last year, and you know, now that he's swinging a decent bat, you can pair him with Ronnie Hernandez as the 3-4 hitters, and you got a little oomph there.
Yeah, definitely.
And as far as Osigan, you know, the Kannapolis team is hitting 194 on the year, so the fact that he's hitting 250 with a 350 OBP, that says a lot. He's doing really well. And then the last guy I wanted to point out, and, you know, he's kind of a novelty, but maybe not, is Rikui Nishida. And this is an interesting stat, Elijah. He's got 12 hits on the year, and he's hitting 218. But his on-base percentage is 368 because he has 12 walks to 9 strikeouts.
Nice. Yeah. Nishida's he's a pro, right? You can just see it. He's got that college experience. He looks more kind of polished than a lot of the players at that level. I don't know how far it'll take him, but he's fun to watch. That's for sure. And once he gets on the bases, he's fast, he's athletic, he's aggressive. Just a fun player to keep an eye on for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, we got a little 10 minutes here to do this. We're going to start with some talk about some middle infield depth. I know this is something that you had mentioned to me, and I love the idea because it is, you know, we talk about all these players in the system every week that are performing well, but it's a different lens to kind of look at a positional group and see throughout the organization, like, what does that positional group look like? The middle infield is something that, yes, you have Colson Montgomery, right? The top prospect in the system, one of the top prospects in baseball, expected to be the shortstop going into next season, right? Beyond Colson Montgomery, who are kind of the names at each level and the people you're watching to be the middle infield core of this franchise?
Well, it's interesting. This, you know, people who have listened to this podcast and others, we're constantly talking about three or four pitchers at every level every week.
Yeah.
Clearly is a lot of pitching depth in the organization. We've also talked a lot about the catchers up and down the line that, you know, there are three or four guys who are really interesting. There's a lot of great depth there that we've never had before. But conversely, at middle infield, that's probably one of the has the least amount of depth in the organization because you've got two number one draft picks, Colson Montgomery and Jacob Gonzalez. Then the only other guy you could really see as a pro right now is Brooks Baldwin. And I think those are the three.
Yeah, I think those are the three. But I think there is some other guys at the lower levels, right, that you kind of see and you project. Ryan Burrows is one. I know you're a big fan of Ryan Burrows. He is right now injured in the ACL and working out in Arizona. Burrows will probably be in Canny, maybe even Winston to start the season, but should be in Winston for most of this year is my guess. Burrows is another guy that's, I think, worth mentioning in terms of the middle infield, right?
True. Good point.
And then another one is Javier Magonalen, who's a DSL guy who was just phenomenal last year in the DSL. And then he's kind of someone that I think we are hoping is going to make his pro debut. He might spend most of the season in the Arizona Complex League. But last year in the Dominican League, Javier Magonalen had a 999 OPS. Pretty incredible season from him. That's a guy who he plays. I think he's probably a second baseman. He's listed as 5'8", 160. I haven't seen much of him live, but I know his numbers were jumping off the chart last year. And another person that could be kind of a second base option potentially in the long, long-term future. Anybody else that kind of comes to mind in terms of those middle infield options?
I think that's the top of the list. You got anybody else?
Trying to think if there's anybody else off the top of my head, but not a ton. I think that's really probably those guys. I know we were pretty excited about Leodel Chapei a few years ago. He's been more of a bench player in Winston this year, really hasn't taken much of a step forward. He's played some more outfield as well. I think Jordan Sprinkle was a pretty high draft pick. He's been getting a lot of reps in Winston-Salem at second base to start the year for the most part, but also has struggled a little bit, hasn't really taken a step forward. The glove is great with Sprinkle. Sprinkle's a great defender, but he kind of the bat is still kind of lagging behind a little bit. And that's about it, I think. It's definitely a thinner position group, right? You've got Colson, and then you've got Jacob Gonzalez, and you've got Brooks Baldwin, who has taken a step forward. And like we talked about earlier, Brooks Baldwin is definitely on our radar if he wasn't already before the season. But beyond those three and then the two young guys with Burrows and McGonnellan, there's a little bit of a lack of depth in the organization, I would say, compared to some of the other positional groups.
Right. A lot of guys in Canny that we know nothing about. So maybe somebody will pop there. You know, a couple of new draft picks out in Arizona. So we haven't seen those guys even in their first pro game. So maybe there's, you know, one or two more, but not a lot of depth.
Yeah, so we'll kind of do the same thing with maybe corner infield next week, and then we'll get to outfield at some point as well. But it's fun to look at because, like we've talked about, the organization from a farm system perspective is in a much better place than it was even just a year ago, right? Like the depth of the system is much stronger than it was. But it's also heavier in some positions than other. I think the pitching and catching depth, like we've said, is really good right now. The pitching depth is better than it's been in my time following the White Sox closely. And the catching depth is definitely better than it's been in the past few years. There's multiple catchers within the organization, led by Caro, of course, that are legitimately like exciting to watch and to keep an eye on. But the middle infield, the infield in general, I think is somewhere that the depth is a little bit weaker, especially in the middle infield, like I mentioned today. We'll dive into the corner infield a little bit next week at the end of the episode. But yeah, this is a... you know, it's a rough time, right, Jeff? Being a White Sox fan is not the best right now. It's not a lot of fun, but there is a lot to continue to watch in this farm system.
Right. As long as you're not watching the Major League Club and you're watching the Birmingham Club, you're going to be entertained.
That's for sure. Well, that'll do it for this episode of The Roundup. For my co-host, Jeff Cohen, you can find him at AAAJeff on Twitter. I'm Elijah Evans. You can find me at ElijahEV8. We will be back next week to talk more White Sox minor league baseball.